Hello and welcome. It is Eric Erickson here, the Eric Erickson Show across the nation from my flagship studio, WSB in Atlanta, via satellite or the internet or wherever you are. You can also always get my stream at ewerickson.com. We got the 24-hour stream. If you missed the show, you can catch up. You can get the podcast, whatever you want, and follow me on social media. At E.W. Erickson, everywhere that a grown man should be and nowhere a grown man shouldn't. So Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, but not Snapchat, and sure as hell not TikTok. Good gracious. Y'all don't want to see me in TikTok anyway. All right. I want to do something. Change of plans here. Philip, this will be what you want. If he's awake. We stayed on the front porch smoking cigars last night. Now, I want to spend some time with you on elections for next year, because I keep getting this question. What happens? Where do we go? What do we do? What's up? Well, for perspective, next year, there are 34 Senate seats up for grabs. There are all 435 House seats up for grabs. In addition, let me get you the number here for governors. There will be 36 governors races. Now let's walk through these. Let me bring you up to speed here. And yes, now is the time to talk about it. Now is the time to talk about it because in large part, people are already starting up their primaries. And remember, the primaries are going to happen February, March, April, May. Some states have outlier primaries. I think Florida's like August or September, but most of them are early in the year. Let's begin with the Senate seats here. You've got Alabama. Here are the seats that are up for governor next year. For governor's races in 2022, these states will have elections: Alabama, Alaska, Arizona, Arkansas, California, Colorado, Connecticut, Florida, Georgia, Hawaii, Idaho, Illinois, Iowa, Kansas, Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Minnesota, Nebraska, Nevada, New Hampshire, New Mexico, New York, Ohio, Oklahoma, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, South Carolina, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, Vermont, Wisconsin, and Wyoming. Now, some of these people are term limited. The ones who are term limited are Doug Ducey in Arizona, Asa Hutchinson in Arkansas, David Ige in Hawaii, Larry Hogan in Maryland, Pete Ricketts in Nebraska, Kate Brown in Oregon, Tom Wolf in Pennsylvania, and Gina Raimondo in Rhode Island. The rest of them aren't. From a standpoint of partisan breakdown, overwhelmingly it is Republican states. But the problem for the Democrats is these lean Republican already. You got 20 Republican governors and 16 Republican governors up in 2022. And Joe Biden's popularity right now is around 45% at best. At best. So let's look at this. Bear with me here. Maryland has Larry Hogan. He's a moderate Republican, allegedly wants to run for president. He's like the Democrats' dream Republican because he's basically a Democrat. It's not going to work. And then you've got, let's see here, in Pennsylvania, you've got Tom Wolf, who's a Democrat, and the Republicans have a challenge there. Not only that, but Pennsylvania is a state where if the election were held today, if you believe, and again, you can't believe the polling, but believe the trend lines. And if you believe the trend lines in the polling, Republicans could pick that up. They already control the legislature there. They've also got Pat Toomey, his seat on the ballot. He's not running, but Republicans will be running there. But then you got a state like Georgia. Let's focus on Georgia for just a moment before we move into Florida. In Georgia, you've got a governor, Brian Kemp, who is being challenged by Trump voters who have yet to find a credible Trump candidate challenger. You've got Vernon Jones out there running, but he's kind of crazy nut. He was a pro-abortion Democrat until this year, and now he's suddenly a pro-life Republican. The guy's not even a chameleon. He's just an opportunist. So he's not going to be a viable challenger to Kemp. They're trying to find somebody. They found some mayor who apparently lived in a recreation of Jefferson Davis's plantation. Like, he wanted to live in a recreation of Jefferson Davis's plantation. Good luck getting that guy. So they can't really find someone to run against Brian Kemp. And Kemp's polling, by the way, has gone back up. It turns out that Donald Trump attacking Brian Kemp has helped Brian Kemp in the suburbs of Atlanta. Why? Let me set the stage for you here on this race. When Brian Kemp ran for governor in 2018 against Stacey Abrams, he got endorsed by Donald Trump. Now, Trump supporters will tell you he would have lost to Casey Cagle in 2018, but for Donald Trump. If you look at the data, that's not actually true. Kemp actually won handily the early vote. Now, Trump had no impact on the early vote because his endorsement came the last day of early voting, and Kemp crushed early voting. So he was going to win anyway, but Donald Trump padded the margin. The downside of Trump endorsing him is that suburban voters in the metro Atlanta area who lean Republican didn't like Donald Trump. He didn't lose Georgia. He didn't have Georgia stolen from him. He lost it. And he lost it because of these suburban voters. Now, the reality here is that Kemp got hurt in the suburbs, and those voters went for Stacey Abrams because they thought that he was just going to be a Donald Trump flunky. Whether you like Trump or not, those suburban voters didn't. So they punished Kemp. Now, subsequently, Kemp has proven himself to be his own man, and in fact, the president wants to come after him. So the result has been that Brian Kemp's polling in the suburbs has gone up, even as Trump voters are trying to attack him. That helps Kemp with the suburban voters, but it hurts him with his money because he's going to have to spend money to get through the primary in order to go after Stacey Abrams. And do you really think these voters are going to stay home? I get asked all the time by Trump voters, what's Brian Kemp going to do for me? Probably the answer is nothing. He's going to be a good governor for everybody. And he doesn't need to glad hand you or suck up to you because your alternative is handing the state over to Stacey Abrams. And if you want to hand the state over to Stacey Abrams, hand the state over to Stacey Abrams, and you can complain that Brian Kemp didn't kiss your butt. Good luck with that. Kemp is probably going to be helped. And in fact, I think Stacey Abrams knows it. Have y'all seen Stacey Abrams nationally anywhere? She's been kind of quiet. Why? Because she knows that Joe Biden is a drag. And she built herself up nationally and made a couple of mistakes, including coming out aggressively against voter ID before Democrats in Washington decided voter ID was okay. And then said, I never opposed voter ID. And getting Major League Baseball to move their boycott Georgia over the election law. They said, I didn't cause them to do that. The national media has built her up. They want a rematch against Brian Kemp. Brian Kemp's got to consolidate the Republican base. Polling suggests he's doing it, but he's going to have to spend more money than he otherwise would because of clowns like Vernon Jones running against him. But he will probably win because Joe Biden's popularity is bad. In fact, that may impact Raphael Warnock, the U.S. senator the Democrats got, who's only on a two-year term to try to finish get a six-year term. And his polling started to come down as he reveals himself to be as radically progressive as Kelly Loeffler warned everyone he would be. The question is, do the Republicans go with Herschel Walker? Can Herschel Walker beat a guy like Warnock, or do they go with someone else, say Gary Black, a Latham Sadler, or Kelvin King, someone like that? Now, I want to focus on governors again. I want to spend some time on governors first, because the other governor you got to pay attention to is a Republican governor named Ron DeSantis. DeSantis is popular in Florida, even with Democrats, and you would never know it from the national media. Now, why? It should be obvious to everyone that the Ron DeSantis 2022 race is the precursor to the Ron DeSantis 2024 race for president. More and more polls have come out that show Trump voters would still prefer Donald Trump, but if Donald Trump doesn't run in 2024, they want Ron DeSantis. So the media is doing everything they can to pile on Ron DeSantis. And in piling on Ron DeSantis, they want to defeat him in 2022. I don't think they're going to be able to defeat him. I mean, when you've got Charlie Crist out there, who is a terrible candidate to begin with, the Democrats don't particularly like him. You've got, what is it? Is it Val Demming who's now going to run for governor as well in Florida? It's not going to go over well. The Republicans are going to rally. They've got the Democratic Party in Florida is largely broken at the grassroots ground game level. So DeSantis is probably going to win, and then that sets him up for 2024. virus or not. Now, the other interesting race out there is actually Laura Kelly. Y'all may not know Laura Kelly. Laura Kelly is the Democratic governor of Kansas. And you're thinking, Kansas has a Democrat? Yes. Kansas has a Democrat because Republicans went all in on a bad candidate in 2018. I shouldn't say he was a bad candidate. It's just he was a candidate that moderate. Kansas has a lot of moderate Republicans. This is Bob Dole territory. And those Kansas Republicans didn't like the firebrand conservative. And so they just sat back and let the Democrats have it and figured we'll take her on in 4 years. Well, the Republicans are probably going to pick up Kansas. In fact, when I look through the list, the Republicans probably aren't going to lose anything. You got Mike DeWine in Ohio. Republicans dislike him more than Democrats do because of his handling of COVID, and even the Republicans tend to like him. You got Kevin Stitt in Oklahoma. He's going to win re-election. Greg Abbott in Texas may get beaten in a primary. He's not going to get beaten in a general. You got Bill Lee in Tennessee, who's just fine. There really isn't ground for Democrats to make up when it comes to governor's races, particularly given the unpopularity of Joe Biden, which leads me to Tony Evers, the Democratic governor of Wisconsin. Democratic governor of Wisconsin is probably going to be beaten by a Republican because of Joe Biden's popularity or lack thereof across the country. It seems Republicans are in position to pick up more gubernatorial seats, which gets me to the United States Senate. The conventional wisdom had been that you were not going to see a major breakthrough for Republicans in the Senate, except it appears to me they very well could make some major ground in 2022. There are 34 Senate seats up for election. 20 of them by Republicans, 14 by Democrats. And if you look at the map superficially, there are problems for the Republicans. Like, for example, in Pennsylvania, you got Pat Toomey. Pat Toomey's a Republican, was far more conservative in the House, became more moderate in the Senate. And it's a state that has a Democratic governor who's term limited. Republicans may be able to pick up that state. But Joe Biden, again, he's not very popular. Then there's New Hampshire. You've got Maggie Hassan as the Democratic senator there, but if Governor Sununu runs, he's hugely popular. He's already at 50% of the polling against her. He's a popular governor. Republicans could get that seat. They could get Raphael Warnock, depending on the Republican nominee. They could get Raphael Warnock and pick up Georgia. Where do the Democrats gain seats? Well, the Democrats, maybe they could get Wisconsin, but in an off-year election with Republicans fired up, it's probably not likely. Maybe they can take Pennsylvania, but again, in an off-year election with Joe Biden not very popular, it's likely that they can't do it. Meanwhile, the Republicans might be able to pick up Colorado. They may be able to pick up Arizona. They may be able to pick up Nevada. They probably will keep Wisconsin, and they probably will flip Georgia, depending on their candidate. And in New Hampshire, let's not forget New Hampshire. If Sununu runs, the Republicans are probably going to get that one. That now puts the Republicans ahead in 2022 in the Senate. We haven't even talked about the House, and there's really no reason to talk about the House because the Republicans only need 5 seats for their majority, and they're going to get it. Plus, they have redistricting to help them. Now, I run through all of this for a very important reason. We are about to enter a period post 9/11 after the memorials have happened. We're past Labor Day. We're headed into the holidays. And the media is going to try its best to lock in a narrative ahead of 2022 that helps Joe Biden and the Democrats. You're about to see the most hysterical media coverage about Republicans you have ever seen in this country, even more so than 2020. Why? Because the Republicans already have advantages. They've got advantages in gubernatorial races. They've got advantages in House races. And everyone went into 2021 thinking, well, look at the map. There are 20 Republican seats up in the Senate. They're going to be on defense. They're going to lose. And now it looks like the landscape has changed enough. Republicans could do well there as well. The only way for the Democrats to stop a red wave coming is to complicitly work with the media to bury stories damaging to the Democrats and play up stories damaging to the Republicans or make up stories damaging to the Republicans. In other words, we're about to enter peak COVID hysteria and peak COVID hysteria that comes at a time it's receding in red states in the South and going up in blue states in the North. But somehow the media is going to find a way to blame Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis. You just wait. I wouldn't say I'm a chair snob, but I kind of am a chair snob. Y'all, I sit for 3 hours for radio and then all the writing and stuff I do. I'm in my chair in my office a lot. And I bought one of those super expensive Herman Miller chairs and I've traded it in for my ex chair. The moment I sat down and it began to massage my back, I thought, this is the chair for me. Yes, my chair, my ex chair, gives me a massage. It also can heat up. It can cool down. It's amazing. The massage, the temperature control, it's designed and made exclusively for the X chair. Once you feel the customized support of its patented dynamic variable lumbar, the DVL, they call it, your back will have never been so happy. What you do, go to xchaireric.com now. That's the letter X, chair, E-R-I-C-K.com for $100 off your order. X chair has a 30-day guarantee of complete comfort. And I can tell you, as a radio show host who spends a ton of time in my chair, X chair really does have complete comfort. So again, go to xchaireric.com now. Letter X, the word chair, E-R-I-C-K.com for $100 off your order. X chair has a 30-day guarantee, complete comfort. It's xchaireric.com. Take my advice. Get an X chair. Hello there. It is Eric Erickson here. The phone number is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. If you want to be on the program, I'm happy to have you on the program. There is this news that compounds the problems the Democrats will be facing as they head into 2022. Headline, CDC tightened masking guidelines after threats from teachers' unions. Yes, the Biden administration tightened its masking guidance after a prominent teachers union threatened White House officials with publicly releasing harsh criticism, internal emails show. The National Education Association sent a draft statement to White House officials that included harsh criticism of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's masking guidance, the emails show. But the teachers union ultimately published a version with a much softer tone, and the CDC clarified its guidance to indicate that everyone should be masked in schools regardless of vaccination status. The new email shows further coordination between the White House and teachers unions just months after reports highlighted the extent the unions have influenced the administration's messaging on school reopenings. One of the hardest issues in the world today, particularly with polling being as broken as it is figuring out, am I in the majority or the minority on something? I've told you guys before, when I was a political consultant, I used to tell candidates, know when you're in the minority, even when you think you're right. Know when you're in the minority, even when you think you're right. You've got to be able to do that. Because you've got to understand that if I'm taking a position, everyone likes it or people hate it, but I think I'm right. And I need to explain to them why I'm right and try to convince them. With public polling as broken as it is, it's harder and harder to tell outside your bubble. You may think everybody agrees with me because in your circle of friends at church and your circle of friends out of church and your office, whatever, everybody's patting you on the back, giving you an attaboy, but you may be in the minority overall. I just think, and I've tried, and I read a lot. I read way more on the other side of the aisle than I used to and try to engage with Democrats way more to get a sense of what they actually think. And I actually do think that the masking stuff in school really is not good for the Democrats when it comes to elementary school kids. I actually think Republicans are in the minority when it comes to high school kids wearing masks, that most parents seem to recognize that, yeah, it's okay if my senior in high school wears a mask. But I think the Democrats are deeply on the wrong side of public opinion when it comes to toddlers and kindergartners having to wear masks. And I don't know that the Democrats realize it because in their circle of progressive friends, it's become cult-like, this addiction to wearing masks all the time. The View the other day, apparently, that Whoopi Goldberg and Joy Behar, from what I was reading, were basically taking the position we should never not wear masks again. That's not a sustainable position for most Americans. And if the Democrats go in that direction, which it appears they are, they're going to be on the wrong side of voters, let alone history, when it comes to this stuff. Hi there. I got news for you that's happening now. It is Eric Erickson here. It is my show. You can call in 877-973-7425. I have had on this program on multiple occasions Stephen Gutowski. Stephen Gutowski, he's been a writer in conservative circles, a journalist, a reporter. He worked for a while for the Washington Free Beacon covering gun news, and he decided to break out on his own and start a site called The Reload. Stephen Gutowski has some of the best Second Amendment sources in the country, inside and outside the NRA, within the ATF and others. He is a trusted reporter. When you read or listen to or watch coverage on the news about the Second Amendment, more often than not, the person who's covering the story knows not the first thing about a firearm. You can tell by how often they call a magazine a clip. Stephen is a firearms instructor. He knows guns. He is active in the Second Amendment community, and he's a reporter. And he's taken those skills together and built his sources, and he has done something tremendous. He's been on this program a couple of times now talking about David Chipman. David Chipman is or was Joe Biden's nominee to be director of the ATF. Multiple sources. I'm reading from The Reload now, Stephen's site, thereload.com. If you care anything about the Second Amendment, you should subscribe to The Reload because the news is better, more thorough, more accurate, and more cutting edge and recent current stuff than anywhere you're going to get anywhere else. Thereload.com. I'm not getting paid to say that. I'm just telling you, I'm a subscriber. I paid to be a subscriber, and it is fantastic. Multiple sources have told Politico, The Washington Post, and CNN the White House plans to withdraw President Biden's nomination of David Chipman after failing to garner 50 votes in the Senate. Chipman was unable to secure support from even the Democratic caucus after a contentious confirmation hearing and a series of Reload stories on allegations of racism on his part coming from former ATF agents. The Reload stories led to calls from Republicans for new hearings and a whistleblower report being filed with the ranking member of the Senate Judiciary Committee. In August, a black former ATF agent told The Reload that Chipman had falsely accused the black former agent of cheating on a promotion assessment because he believed the agent had done too well on a section of the examination. "I couldn't believe it when it happened," the agent said. But when I read about his other comments, in my mind, I was like, that mother, beep, that's what happened, he said. "Hey, a lot of African Americans qualified to be promoted on this certification list. They must have been cheating." And then he had to go and find one. I happen to be the one he found. The agent said Chipman's complaint against him initiated a years-long inspector general investigation against him in 2007 that sidetracked his career before exonerating him. The Department of Justice confirmed Chipman had initiated an investigation against an agent over accusations of cheating in 2007. However, they would not release the report or confirm any further details about it. The department did defend Chipman against allegations of racial bias. "Any allegation of bias against David Chipman are false," Dina Iverson, principal deputy director of the Department of Justice's Office of Public Affairs, said at the time. And in the two times he was the subject of workplace complaint over a 25-year career at the ATF, the claims were thoroughly investigated and found to be meritless. That allegation came shortly after two ATF agents corroborated the existence of a separate allegation that Chipman made a racist remark about black agents applying for promotions while serving in the agency's Detroit office. That story prompted all Republican members of the Judiciary Committee to ask for a second hearing on Chipman and led Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell to call on the White House to withdraw his nomination. The calls were rejected by Dick Durbin, Senate Judiciary Committee chairman, who implied the sources of the Reload story were made up and attacked the publication for being an extreme anti-gun safety website. It went on and on and on. And now Stephen Gutowski and his original reporting have scuttled the nomination of the would-be ATF chairman or would-be ATF head, who is a gun control zealot. One of the things Chipman wanted to do, and any ATF head under Joe Biden is probably going to want to do this, is to change existing rules so that current gun owners will suddenly be criminals because of the guns they own or the magazines, the size of the magazines they own, bits of pieces of guns that they have that they own. He wants to criminalize law-abiding citizens who lawfully purchase guns. Now, here's the thing. There's a larger issue here. And I need everybody to follow along with me on this one. This is, I think, the important side point. And it's a point that if I don't say it, it's not going to get said. Stephen Gutowski went out and started the Reload, and he relied on readers and subscribers to get his site off the ground. Very much in the same way, I started my Substack site when I decided I wanted to do a syndicated radio show separate from what I was previously doing on WSB. I started a morning show, and the way that I was able to monetize it and grow it in syndication was to do a newsletter, a daily newsletter, where if you're a member, you get special additional information. I give a lot of content for free. You can subscribe to it, by the way, if you text the word data to 33777. You can get a link, ewerickson.substack.com. You can subscribe for free. Give a lot of free stuff away. Also give additional information away to paying subscribers. And it has helped to a degree make me uncancelable. So I let me step back and explain this to you. And I don't want to get into the minutiae. I don't want to bore you, but it gets to a larger point. And please, even if your eyes glaze over a minute, just stick around for this important larger point. So if I have a show, it's on WSB Radio in Atlanta, Cox Media Group. I get paid a good salary. I do the show. They allow me to syndicate the show myself. I have some advertisements, Eden Pure, Patriot Mobile. But then the subscribers to my newsletter help me expand my show around the country. So if you subscribe, $70 a year, you're helping me cover my staff costs with syndication and satellite costs and all that. And it also, at times I don't have advertisers because I don't have a ton of advertisers. Your local station has ads. My show does not. And it helps cover my costs to syndicate the show. And I have had on multiple occasions advertisers get boycotted by progressives and lost the advertisers because the progressives attacked the advertiser for advertising on my show. So by relying on subscribers, I'm able to expand a nationwide presence of my show where you can cancel all my advertisers and I still have the revenue to cover the satellite costs. And Stephen Gutowski used that model for the Reload. He left his cushy job at the Washington Free Beacon, however cushy the Free Beacon is. Oh, it's cushy. I got a lot of friends who work there. And he's doing good stuff at the Reload. Or let's take the Washington Free Beacon, a right-of-center site that has generated news and information with a conservative worldview. And it focuses on Democrats. It has dredged up dirt on Democrats. And it gets into the news cycle and in social media where the Democrats try to dismiss it as a right-wing site, but they can't. Now, all of these things have something in common. These are conservatives providing news and information and content in ways progressives have tended to. Now, I'm somewhat different in that I also do conservative talk radio. Progressives have tried talk radio, but it doesn't go well for them because you've got to be somewhat entertaining to be on talk radio. And have you ever met an entertaining, funny progressive activist? They're all very angry. They've got very comfortable shoes and they're very, very angry. It's kind of hard to have a progressive radio show. You got to be personable. You got to be relatable. You got to be a little funny. You got to be able to laugh at yourself. And what progressive do you know can laugh? I'm a middle-aged fat white guy. Y'all, I put on white socks and you can't tell where my leg ends and the sock begins. I'm totally comfortable telling you that I am that white. It's middle-aged whiteness. A progressive said, no, that they can't. The only people they can laugh at are white guys like me. They got no sense of humor. But there's a larger issue here in that progressives have built these networks over time and have embedded within mainstream institutions, and some conservatives have gotten there and they oftentimes get attacked for being there when they're actually doing good work. And sometimes they jump back into the conservative space. Conservatives, to a degree, have been ghettoed by the mainstream media and the left, forced to be in a conservative slum, if you will, where, let's just be honest, a lot of conservative news sites, they don't look like the New York Times or even CNN. They look kind of cheap. They're covered in pop-up ads. It doesn't look appealing. And it's very clickbaity. It doesn't look mainstream. It doesn't look normal. To a degree, conservatives do that to themselves. But oftentimes, there will be conservatives who jump into the mainstream media. And they get attacked by their friends for doing this. Look, I'm living proof of this. I was on CNN for 3 years. I was the one guy who would go on CNN during the 2012 race and defend the Republicans. I'd defend Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney as a Republican, as a conservative. They were getting assailed by Barack Obama. Everybody on CNN was out to get him, and I would defend him. I defended Mitt Romney and his comments about the 47% not paying taxes and the 47% paying taxes and the majority not paying taxes. I was willing to defend him because I think he was right. But still get assailed constantly by, you're not a conservative. A real conservative would be on CNN. You know who got me to go to CNN was Rush Limbaugh. Rush Limbaugh told me I needed to be a missionary at CNN. I needed to be able to go into hell itself and preach the conservative gospel and come out. And after 3 years, he got Roger Ailes to extract me and land me at Fox. And it was actually conservatives who were the most angry that I was at CNN that you're selling out. And conservatives do this to themselves. But the corollary here is that a lot of conservatives don't take the time to support good conservative products. So here's The Reload, a conservative news site that literally, because of original reporting, has taken out David Shipman, the far left progressive anti-gun radical Joe Biden wanted to be ATF chair. How many people subscribe to The Reload? I have no idea. But I would submit it's worth supporting. But also there's this. So often conservatives have relied on mega donors to get things off the ground. And there's a big difference between the left and the right mega donors. I've talked to progressive friends of mine who do left-wing activism, and they always tell me that the return on investment for a progressive mega donor, a George Soros or someone like that, is what impact are you having? Are you advancing the progressive agenda? On the conservative side, overwhelmingly, the conservative donors want to know when they get their money back and how much profit are they going to make. And that becomes the differentiator between the successor or not. So the left can build a really good-looking, polished, credible-looking site and hire top staff to advance a progressive agenda. And on the right, you got a crap-looking site and barely any staff because you got to worry about the financial return on investment for the major donor. You can't spend your time hiring the good reporters building out. On occasion, you find a philanthropist on the right who actually wants to progress, which is where you get something like the Washington Free Beacon. Or you get National Review, where you've got committed conservative donors. Or you get The Dispatch, Steve Hayes and Jonah Goldberg, which some conservatives don't like. I think it's a fantastic site, some of the best news you can get out there. And it's subscriber-based on Substack, much like my newsletter. And it's people who are investing in it. Conservatives have got to do a better job investing in guys like Stephen Gutowski and in people like The Dispatch, even though there are times you may disagree with them. You may not like David French today because he said something you don't like. Last week, people loved David French because he was defending Texas in the Supreme Court. This week, they'll be mad at him about something else. But it's great. It's good. And I've got to say that if conservatives don't step up and get themselves out of the ghetto, the left isn't going to help them. The mainstream media isn't going to help them. So here you've got a site like The Reload, which with original reporting, non-salacious, non-scandal, non-BS news story, was able to take out a nominee. There are so many people right now who are chasing clickbait, and the stories they generate, they lack credibility. And that's part of the problem here. Credible conservatives need to be supported around the country in what they do. Because you see results like this with The Reload. You got a Democratic-controlled Senate that could not confirm an ATF nominee because a guy like Stephen Gutowski took it on himself to go out, start a site, take a chance, got subscribers, did real on-the-ground, credible, legit reporting following the ethical standards of mainstream journalism, and his reporting led to a nomination not going through. He should be commended for that. The left will never commend him. The mainstream media won't give him credit for it. But am I willing to do an entire monologue talking about conservative journalism and why we need it and giving Stephen credit? Absolutely, because somebody's got to do it, and he deserves credit. And overall, conservatives need to be doing more of this stuff. You even need to investigate your own side, because if you don't hold your own side accountable, the other side sure as heck is going to try to hold you accountable. And rather you do it than them do it. We need to be mindful of this moving forward. And conservative donors, you need to do better supporting causes, not trying to cash in on the conservative movement. Now, you need to cash in on Eden Pure and go get yourself some of the Thunderstorm. You can get a 3-pack of the Thunderstorm if you go to EdenPureDeals.com, click on my name, and you'll see the Eden Pure Thunderstorm. What is it? It's an air purifier, a filterless air purifier, so you don't have to keep a subscription to air filters. You get this thing, you wipe it out on occasion, you hold it in your hand. If you get a 3-pack, you can put one upstairs, one downstairs. You can take one with you if you're in a hotel or a rental car, you got an RV, or you got a basement, you can put one there. With the 3-pack, you're saving $200, and you get free shipping. Now, how do you do it? You go to EdenPureDeals.com, and you click on my name, Eric Erickson, and then you put it in your shopping cart, and there's an orange checkout button. You can't miss it because it's orange. I don't recall another site with an orange checkout button. You click the checkout button, and you'll see a discount code, and you put in E-R-I-C-K and the number 3. No space. Eric 3. And you will save $200. You'll get free shipping. You'll get the 3-pack of the Eden Pure Thunderstorms. Clean the air in your house. Get rid of odors. It eliminates them. Doesn't mask them. Gets rid of the black mold floating around, the mildew, all of that stuff. Eden Pure Thunderstorm, it's great. You can get 3 of them, save $200. EdenPureDeals.com. Use code ERIC3 at checkout. This hour of the program brought to you by First Liberty Building and Loan. Wherever you are in the United States of America, they want to help your business become an even bigger business. We're talking 6-figure loans. You got to buy a building, build a building, buy a fleet of cars. They want to help you. Go to FirstLibertyGA.com, FirstLibertyGA.com. And thanks to them for their sponsorship. They were our original sponsor. We could have never gotten the show off the ground when we started it in the mornings, 9 to noon, without their help. Now, we got a lot of other stuff we have to talk about, including this problem with China. The Tiananmen Square massacre vigil organizers have been arrested by Hong Kong authorities. The police accused the group that arranged a mass candlelight remembrance of not cooperating with an investigation into allegations they are foreign agents. This is the Wall Street Journal. National Security Police arrested 4 members of the group that for decades organized an annual vigil commemorating the victims of the 1989 Tiananmen Square massacre, the only such mass remembrance on Chinese soil, before authorities banned it in 2020, claiming the pandemic. Police accused the group, the Hong Kong Alliance, of failing to comply with an order to hand over information as part of an investigation allegations. They're acting as a foreign agent. The trumped up charges, of course. But this is happening more and more in China, and I continue to believe someone, and it's clearly not going to be Joe Biden, has got to start rallying American businesses to divest themselves from China. We have to do this, even if it drives up costs. We're going to need to. It's a deeply frustrating situation that so many American businesses are pouring money into China right now, and then China's using that money to build up its military, its secret police, its intelligence operations, the spying that it's doing within the United States of America, harassing individuals within the United States, targeting us all online, much like the Russians have done. And of course, they're the originators of this virus. And now they're saying they expect to be dealing with it within 6 months. You notice nobody's really talking about what's going on in China with the virus. They've got whole sections of their country shut down as the virus is run rampant, and the media can't report on it. They don't want to report on it. The Chinese will block their movies from the box office, which is not a good situation for any of us to be in right now. We need to stand up to China.